Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond, with my guest Ron Hanberg, here at KLBB. Let's listen to an editorial. This aired on April 30th, 1985. You don't see editorials on TV news any longer from the general manager. And this is our guest here, Ron Hanberg, giving his opinion.
A Channel 4 editorial on more support for the mentally ill with Ron Hanberg.
There's a lot of talk here at the Capitol about how to control government spending and cut taxes, and that's good. What you don't hear much about is how some of those so-called savings end up costing us more in the long run, and that's bad. One example concerns the mentally ill. The cost of keeping a mental patient at a state hospital for an average stay is $18,000. It costs five times less, or only about $3,000, for the same person to live in the community while learning to become self-sufficient. When counties participate in such community support programs, psychiatric hospitalizations are nearly cut in half. But of Minnesota's 87 counties, only 35 are funded to help recovering mental patients, and the legislature flatly refuses to expand the support program to even a handful of additional counties. It may be too late to reverse this example of false economy, but there's still time to avoid making yet another mistake. We think the legislature should allow persons recovering from mental illness and living in halfway houses to bank up to $1,000 in job earnings. Under present law, any wages in excess of $50 a month must be turned over to the welfare department. As a result, persons motivated to move out of a halfway house can't afford to set up their own apartment. So they stay where they are at a higher cost to the taxpayer. Channel 4's Project Mental Health is showing us the courage needed to overcome mental illness. Here's a chance to provide an incentive to people we have too long ignored and to achieve some real tax savings as well. I'm Ron Hanberg.
Now, this was not a very controversial one, but I'm guessing a few I've seen and I've posted online probably got a few letters to the station, a few phone calls.
Absolutely, and every critical one I was pleased with. Excuse me, because I think that's what editorials are supposed to do. They're supposed to stir up a little controversy, stir up some dust.
Your competition wasn't doing this at this point. This
none.
Was, this was
no.
Well after. I mean, sports might have done a few editorials once in a while, but this is really after TV provided editorial time for people.
One of the subsequent general managers, Jan Danielson, did some, but not often. But then it stopped, and I don't think it started. I visit Hawaii now and then, and there is a general manager in Honolulu who does weekly, if not more often, editorials. They tend to be less controversial, if you will, but nonetheless, he's on the air expressing an opinion, which I think is terrific.
Are they still very substantial? I mean, there's a to me personally, as an outsider looking at the news, it seems like most of it's just become editorials, and the real substance of the news is not really there. It's just more of to stir up the controversy and bring more people in to view and talk about it.
Well, there may be some truth to that. I
think there's a difference between editorial and maybe what's called light journalism. I think
light journalism.
I think that a lot of what's on right now, because now we have we had an hour newscast 38 years ago. Now we have an hour newscast every hour now, I think, on the four stations, and you have to fill in a lot of material. You're putting in a lot of national coverage that the networks feed you. They give you a 2-minute spot on some actor on a show that's carried on the network that night, and I think that there's people talk a lot about, well, it's all opinion. Like, well, I think it's more a lot of light journalism versus actual opinion. What you saw with Ron, that's opinion, that's editorial.
Right, but I think what's also happened is that with the 24-hour news cycle and the Fox News and all the rest, that opinions on newscasts have become more acceptable, that to express your view on what is theoretically a newscast used to be absolutely forbidden, but it's much more common now. That's certainly less true on local television. I'm not suggesting.
Oh, yeah,
but it's,
absolutely. I'm thinking more of like the large cable networks.
Right.
You'll be pleased to know that I have a editorial post that you did same year in 85 when Rudy Boschwitz was reelected the second time, and you did an editorial on his refusal to participate in debates and to he made some kind of comment about, well, you just kind of, you know, he was telling other politicians how to do it, how he did it. I got within about a day, I got comments on the website accusing myself of some kind of agenda I was trying to put out. I put a video I had that was 28 years old on the website, and I want to thank you publicly now for
what an impact.
You're still getting the letters. Occasionally, you know, people search things on the internet, they don't know who the author is, and I don't have my face on this website. I put these posts up there. Mm-hmm. I get emails complaining about content that aired 25 years ago.
Like, this is
this is slanted. This is, I'm like, I did was just post this online, and I type in, I put some historical context in some of these videos, but I don't offer my opinion. It's irrelevant. These things happened a long time ago.
Well, that's the point of media history. I mean, history is going to lean in one direction or the other way. It always changes.
Right.
So you have to take it knowing this is how reality was.
That particular politician lost two races after that one, so I don't know what to I don't know what to tell you.
You know, I try very hard not to talk about the past, mm-hmm. because It sounds like an old guy, you know, talking about the good old days.
This is what the show is.
But so much has changed, and obviously so much of it, is driven by the changing media environment. Mm-hmm. I mean, this pie that used to be split by four local stations, this advertising pie and this audience pie, is now divided by literally dozens or scores or hundreds of media outlets. And it's no surprise, or shouldn't be a surprise, that the local stations and the cable networks have changed to be more competitive in this enormously crowded environment. So I try to view the past with pleasure, but also understanding how much has changed and how the past cannot be the present and cannot be the future.
And that's one thing, too. In this site's all about the past, but one thing that people talk about, the good old days, as you said, but were the good old days always as good as we remember them, or do we think they were that good? You have to live in 2013. That's the reality of it. Is we're not going to go backwards, and the level of information that's out there is not going to decrease. We're just going to figure out a way now to mine all this and be able to make sense of it. There's a few people that enjoy this site that they yearn for the days when we hope we can go back to that. Well, it's not going to go back that way. We're not going to go backwards.
But it doesn't mean that some of those things that made those days great,
can't happen again.
Of those things can't happen again and shouldn't happen again.
One thing I miss is TV documentary and journalism, TV long documentaries, long investigative pieces. There are a couple pieces online. We have the Thy Will Be Done, which was a controversial piece on cults.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, occasionally there's a cult in town that has five people in a garage. They'll go and they'll do a story on it, and it'll be very sensational. But Thy Will Be Done, they took on some very large organized groups here in the Twin Cities and the country, and very objectively looked at them, and that generated a lot of heat for Channel 4.
Absolutely. Almost every Moore report we did generated controversy,
mm-hmm.
but it also generated light.
Did you enjoy that, the controversy?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, it was what I had always envisioned as I grew up in this business. I had always envisioned what television ought to be doing. That's why I decided to spend a career in it, and had those things not been present, I don't think I could go into journalism today, into television journalism today, and get the same pleasure, the same satisfaction out of it that I got in those days. But again, that's talking about the past. But how can you, when you look at One Night on Good Question, whether an inside or outside belly button is better, how can you be serious about television news?
It does seem like back in the day, if you're talking about what we wish would come back, you added to civil discourse. You added to a conversation. It seems like now it's just that light fluff. or it's trying to squash any kind of conversation.
I think that's carried over to even personal conversations. It's really tough now to be in any circle and actually have two different opinions and be able to have a constructive conversation, because I think that the cable news model of yelling at each other has kind of carried over into everyday civilian life. And you can't have a look at our campaign commercials that come up every couple of years. There's nothing that is factual or even, you know, non-sensational. And I think that it carries over to people's dinnertime conversations.
No question. And one of the things people, I think, appreciated in those days was that there was that chance to really talk about an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And have the documentaries provided kind of a platform for that. They provide an entree to that conversation. But I also should say very quickly, you know, there's a lot of really nice things going on local television today. Mm-hmm. Some of the stuff that Boyd Huppert does on Channel 11 and Pat Kessler is doing on Channel 4 and others that I can't name are substantive. They're looking at the community. They are trying to follow the legislature as best you can.
Right.
And in spot news, of course, the floods and the fires and all, television does still a marvelous job, mm-hmm. because that's what it can do best.
Well, look at the ability now, with a photographer now can go out to a story with a camera as big as their hand and take pictures that are, you know, 100 times more gorgeous or more vivid than the film cameras could 30
Absolutely.
Years ago. With imagine the equipment that people had to be breaking their backs on carrying.
Many photographers, their careers ended early because of that, the size of the equipment and all the rest. But it's that, of course, the equipment you speak of has also allowed all these citizen journalists
mm-hmm.
to become part of the process, and also photographers to be acting also as reporters. The whole backpack journalism thing, where now instead of having a photographer and a reporter and potentially even a sound man or a light man, now it's a one person often shooting, scripting.
Well, we've now found a way for stringers to be able to provide the stringers with cell phone cameras, be able to provide the news content.
Absolutely.
You take a look at any of these brawls that happen, and there was one in my former high school that happened this year. I mean, there was 25 kids with a cell phone camera on there that got this on tape. That's that aired globally on global TV. It's amazing how fast these pictures. I mean, we talk about processing film 30 years ago. I mean, I have can't video my phone right now. This could be viral in a minute. If I had anything good to, you know, show.
But you know what? The problem is that nobody knows the truth of what that telephone camera shot.
How many careers have been ruined with badly edited video?
Right, and what is the truth of a situation?
Well, that's something we talked with Ron Majors about, mm-hmm. exactly that. Just mm-hmm. they may get lots of film footage in from people, but they have to go and verify what happened. Is this really something that occurred?
The old saying, a picture's worth a thousand words, can't hold true anymore because Photoshop has now made pictures almost irrelevant, and I'm in my take. Let's take a break real quick. I want to come back and actually want to talk a little bit more about the documentary era and a little bit about Ron, what are you up to now? So we'll be back on Flashback Twin Cities on KLBB.
Good evening. I'm Dave Moore. What you'll be seeing tonight is a television program about television, the effects of watching television violence, television advertising, the effects of watching any television at all. When we began our research last August, the first thing we discovered was that this is a very tough subject to narrow. So, for starters, we'll narrow down to commercial network television. That leaves out public TV and local shows, but it still includes the programming 98% of you watch or 95% of the time. The second thing we discovered, science has a long head start on us. The list of studies and experiments is practically endless. At least 2,200 on television violence alone. But engaging TV...
Ron, a program on local TV telling you how terrible it is to watch TV. That's
especially for kids.
That takes some guts.
I watched that in high school and college. It was required viewing. And as an adult doing this show, and I did a little piece on it for MinPost, the question that arose, I thought, like, well, Channel 4 paid people $500 to turn their TV off for, I think it was a month, I think.
I can't remember, but yeah. It sounds right.
And then aired a hour-and-a-half documentary on the negative effects of watching their programming. I don't think there is a station locally owned or nationally owned today that would actually put a documentary on their airwaves telling how bad the effects of watching our programs are.
Right, and but that's one of those things, again, hopefully started a discussion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the only way that happened, as I said earlier, is because we had a group of owners who were really never once, with one exception as news director, never once was I ever told not to do a story, not to run an editorial, not to do a documentary because it was too sensitive. It would never be done today, I think, largely because of corporate ownership, mm-hmm. because of people who largely don't live in the community, who are ultimately responsible for the stations, the Gannets and the, mm-hmm. the others. But you're right. I'm certain it would never be done today. I'm a little even surprised now looking back that it was done then.
I mean, was that been any kind of like skepticism? Like, do you really want to put this on there? Do you really want to spend the money to show all the negative effects of our great programming, like the Hulk and Wonder Woman?
Not that I remember, truly.
Was there something that actually like sparked that documentary to be made? Like today on TV, if they talk about these things, it's because of a great tragedy that occurred.
No, I think it was just a curiosity. I mean, television viewing even then was a very controversial thing, especially for kids,
mm-hmm.
And the effect of commercials on kids and the amount of time people were spending on television. So even way back then, it was an issue of importance. It's much more now with all this.
You don't hear about the TV. TV used to be, when I was Generation X, that used to be the big thing we heard about. Kids are watching too much TV. We come up after school and watch too much TV. You don't hear that anymore. But what you also don't hear about is, are kids too addicted to online technology or digital technology or handheld technology?
Oh, my nephew's been playing online games since he was three.
But you don't see any studies. You don't hear it, and if it's out there, which I'm sure many universities have done these studies, you don't see it publicized.
If it isn't, it should be, because I think the games, the handheld games, and all the phones and all have become. I mean, how often do you see kids outside playing?
That seems like parents are also much more concerned that if their kids go outside, they're going to be kidnapped, or there's so much more danger outside the home.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems to me that that staring at a small 4.5-inch screen and playing games all day is can't be good, I'll tell you.
But you can watch videos on tcmedianow.com on your phone, so I encourage you to do that. Ron, you left Channel 4 in 1989. Was that when ownership changed and that you left? Is that?
It was pending change. I had just turned 51, and the station was for sale. It was before it was sold to CBS, but they offered an early retirement. I had been there almost 30 years. I had this lifelong dream of writing novels. I was able to leave with enough independence, financial independence, to fulfill that dream.
Mm-hmm.
So I just said goodbye and went up to our cabin in western Wisconsin and started to write. And five novels later, that's been my second half of my life story.
Do you miss it?
Not in the slightest. No, I really don't. I have great memories of the programs and the people, the Susan Spencers and Barry Petersons and Bill Stewarts and all the people who came through WCCO's newsroom.
And Bill Stewart, who we were just talking about before, you know, he was killed in Nicaragua. That's right. Yeah.
Those memories linger, it was a huge part of my life, a part I'll never forget. It made me who I am in many respects, but I have no desire to go back. It's changed so much. It's gone beyond me, or however you would say it. I would not find a place there today.
Did you have some offers after you left?
Well, I never sought offers. They came to me for Channel 2 to help start Newsnight. And because that was the kind of program I believed in, I agreed to do that, and I took a year and a half off from my books to do that. But I never had an interest. The last couple years at WCCO were not pleasant years. The pressures were on, both from a financial point of view and the ratings and so forth. Life was not good.
And we're not going to blame you for any sets, right? We talked about it before, because Channel 4 was known for these really, these sets.
Odd
which,
sets,
yeah,
yes.
Well.
I said to you earlier, I'm not a designer, never claimed to be, but yet somehow, yeah, we had a lot of different sets, plexiglass and a barroom set where people actually expected to see a beer pop up.
See, you got to give Stanley Hubbard credit. He used that blue set for 12 years and didn't have to paint it one time. You guys went through a few of them.
Well, it was a wonderful time in my life, and I treasure it.
Well, Ron, thank you so much for being on today and for the candid opinions of what you did. I know that you like to look forward, not the past, but I think that a lot of people really enjoy hearing these stories, and a lot of people also enjoy looking at these documentaries. I still hope that we'll be able to do investigative documentaries still on TV, and I think that the way technology is today, the way we can capture video, documentaries should be easier in the sense that we can get more pictures, we can go into places we couldn't go. About the equipment, we should be able to get a lot of pictures, a lot of video. You still have to do the writing and the research, get your facts straight, which is what people don't like doing because it takes time. You have to actually sit down and cite your sources and challenge what is facts. I'm using the quotation facts. But I hope we still see more of that.
But you know, it doesn't really have to be even investigative documentaries, just documentaries that open your eyes to issues. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily issues that are held in secret have that kind of aura about them, but just there are so many things in society today that puzzle people and are unclear and yet have a dramatic effect on our lives, on all of our lives. And, well, there's just a lot of room.
I agree. This has been Ron Hanberg. We will be back next week with Bernie Grace. He was at Channel 11 for almost 30 years. We'll be talking about his time in journalism reporting. This is Flashback Twin Cities, KLBB, Club 1220.